Welcome to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast, where we hear from some of the most relevant, up-to-date, informational speakers in our industry. In episode 8, Amy Mangan, a PhD student in the Department of Plant Science at the University of Manitoba, shares her story, nitrogen management for high-yielding spring wheat in Manitoba.
Talk to you about our most recent project, which is our optimizing nitrogen fertilizer strategies for spring wheat in Manitoba. I want to start just by acknowledging the co-authors on this project, Don Flayton and John Hurd. They got the ball rolling on this project before I came on to work with them. So there's currently over 2 million acres of spring wheat grown in Manitoba each year. But our traditional nitrogen requirements are based off of much lower yielding varieties, and these recommendations do not address the high yield potential of the varieties being grown across the province today. The current high yields of our varieties match with our traditional recommendation of 2 to 3 pounds of nitrogen per bushel spring wheat target yield creates a large financial, agronomic, as well as environmental risk for producers across the province. Example of this agronomic risk being associated with applying these large amounts of nitrogen in the spring mainly is lodging, as you can see in this bottom picture. Mid-season fertilizer applications, so splitting our fertilizer applications from not just in the spring, but from spring as well as in season, may mitigate some of these risks, but there's currently very little research done in Manitoba growing conditions. So for this project, we had a number of objectives, but we're going to focus on our first two today. So determining the appropriate nitrogen rate based on yield and protein goals for these varieties, and then determining the most efficient and effective combination of nitrogen rate, timing, and source to meet yield and protein potential of these varieties. This is a very large project. We had three different levels of trials. So we had our bronze level trials, which were on-farm large plot trials that were actually conducted by John Hurd at Manitoba Ag. And then we had our silver level trials, which were small plot contract trials. And then we had our gold level trials, which were our most intensive small plot trials conducted through the U of M by myself. And for today, we're just going to focus on those small plot trials, so our gold and silver level trials. Our gold trials were conducted at Carmen and Brunkhild in the 2016-2017 growing year. So we had 4 site years of gold level sites. And then our silver level sites were conducted in Melitta in 2016 and 2017 through Wado. And then in Carberry 2016, as well as Grass Isle in 2017. So again, we had 4 site years of data for our silver level sites and 4 site years of data for our gold level sites. This is just a quick visual on what these plots looked like. So these are our gold level sites in Brunkhild 2017 on the top, and then, in Carmen on the top, and then Brunkhild 2016 and 2017 across the bottom. So just a scope on how big these trials were. They had a large number of treatments. We were looking at a huge number of factors in these trials. So our treatments, we looked at 2 different varieties of spring wheat across 16 different nitrogen treatments. So the 2 varieties of spring wheat that we looked at in this trial were Brandon, a CWRS variety that I can almost guarantee everybody here has either worked with or heard of Brandon, as it's one of the most popular spring wheat varieties in 2017. And then we also looked at Prosper. Prosper is a Canadian northern hard red variety, and it's coming out of the North Dakota breeding program, so it is known for very high yields, but maybe a more modest or more modest protein content compared to what you'd expect from Brandon. So across our nitrogen treatments that were applied to each variety, we looked at subsets of treatments to address specific nitrogen questions. Just note that the treatments highlighted in yellow were only applied at the gold level sites. We first looked at rate. So increasing rates from 0 to 170 at silver sites and 0 to 200 at gold level sites. And those were applied at planting mid-row banded of conventional urea. And then we looked at timing. So we put a base rate of 80 pounds of nitrogen down at planting through mid-row banders as conventional urea. And then at either stem elongation or flag leaf timing, we went in, and applied a broadcast surface application of Agritain treated urea. We did use an enhanced efficiency fertilizer, Agritain treated urea, to help minimize our losses that could occur from this broadcast surface application in season. And then we also did a post-synthesis application, but only at a single rate of 30 pounds per acre in season. And that was applied as a foliar liquid application. And then we also looked at sources. So we looked at two different blends of ESN and urea. We looked at a suboptimal rate of 80 pounds per acre, which was 40 ESN to 40 urea. And then we looked at a high rate of 140, which was 100 pounds ESN to 40 pounds urea. Those were all compared to the equivalent rates of conventional urea applied. And those were applied mid-row banded at seeding as well. And then we looked at two different sources of post-synthesis nitrogen. So we looked at UAN, which was applied across all sites. And then at our gold level sites, we additionally looked at urea solution. And our UAN was diluted with water down to 14%. And our urea solution was actually, the product we had was diluted to 9% urea solution, 9% nitrogen. So those were applied at equivalent rates. This is just a visual of what these small plots looked like on the ground. This being our Prosper at Brunkhild in 2017. This is our highest yielding site. We saw good visual responses with our 0 pounds of nitrogen per acre was yielding almost 70 bushels per acre, which is typically an all right wheat yield. But then we were pushing the site up to 130 bushels per acre with our nitrogen treatments. I first want to look at the effects of variety, so how these varieties were performing relative to each other across nitrogen treatments. At our silver level sites, we saw increase in yield with Prosper from 4.2 to 16.3 bushels per acre compared to Brandon. And we saw an increase in protein content with Brandon compared to Prosper of 0.7 to 1.3% compared to Prosper. Gold level sites, we saw same trends, so increased yield with Prosper, this time 7.8 to 15.4 bushels per acre across those gold sites. And then we saw an increase in protein again with Brandon compared to Prosper, 1.3 to 2% protein content increase. So general theme, Brandon higher protein, Prosper higher yielding across these two varieties. Moving on to nitrogen rate. Due to the nature of nitrogen responses and its influence by soil nitrogen supply as well as the environmental conditions, we saw that there were different nitrogen responses for each of our site years. Therefore, separating them out for each of our 8 site years. First, I'll go through the silver 4 sites, and then I'll go through the gold 4 sites. So in Melitta 2016, we had 43 pounds of nitrogen per acre in the soil. And our yield, our last significant yield increase was seen at 80 pounds per acre at this Melitta 2016 site. And in terms of protein, our protein increased up to 80 pounds per acre at this site. To note that our yield was relatively modest at Melitta 2016, and we did have high protein concentrations across this entire site with our 0 pounds of nitrogen having a protein content of 13%. This is usually indicates that there was a yield limiting factor other than nitrogen at play in this site. I can't speak to what it would be at this Melitta 2016 site, but it could have been anything from excess disease pressure to moisture stress or anything at this site. But leading to lower yields and higher protein across the site. And the economic optimum at this site was 80 pounds of nitrogen per acre. All of our economics, all of our profitability analysis is based off of pricing from January 5th, 2018. And this is assuming that we have market for low protein wheat. Moving on to Carberry 2016, we saw a very low response in yield with maximum yield being obtained at 50 bushels per acre at this site, but we did have high soil nitrogen supplies. So we had 90 pounds per acre residual soil N And we're also assuming that we had high amounts of mineralization at this site. Again, our protein responses were maxed out around 50 bushels per acre, leading to our economic optimum at this site being 50 bushels per acre, or 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre, sorry. Melitta 2017, we had very low residual soil nitrogen with 11 pounds in the soil. We saw yield increases up to 110 pounds of nitrogen per acre, and our protein increased up to 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre. So that led to our economic optimum being at 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre at this site. Grosse Isle 2017, we had a little bit higher residual soil nitrogen, but our maximum nitrogen, our maximum yield was obtained at around 80 bushels per acre at that site. And for protein, our protein continued to climb up to 140, if not 170 pounds of nitrogen per acre. Our economic optimum was only 110 pounds per acre at that site. So this is just a summary of our rate response for our silver sites. We saw that the range of soil test nitrogen plus fertilizer required per bushel of nitrogen, or per bushel of yield, ranged from 1.5 at Carberry 2016, where we saw very little nitrogen response, to 2.3 at Grosse Isle in 2017. So now moving on to our gold level sites. Our gold level sites all had very similar soil nitrogen or residual soil nitrogen. They ranged across the four sites from 40 to 47 pounds of nitrogen per acre. In Carmen 2016, our yield continued to increase till 140 bushels or pounds of nitrogen per acre. And our protein was high across our entire site in Carmen 2016. And our maximum protein was seen at 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre. With this high protein across this site, we also saw relatively modest yields. This, I can speak to, was due to a hail event that occurred around flag leaf emergence at this site, resulting in lower yields but higher protein across this site. Regardless, the economic optimum was 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre. Brunkhill 2016, we saw 140 pounds per acre was where our yield hit equivalent to maximum. And then our protein continued to increase up to 170 pounds of nitrogen per acre, which led to our economic optimum being 140 pounds of nitrogen. At Carmen 2017, we saw a small response to yield in terms of nitrogen, with 50 pounds per acre being our maximum rate, our maximum yield at that site. But our protein did continue to increase up to 170 pounds of nitrogen per acre, which led to our economic optimum being 140 bushels or pounds of nitrogen per acre at that site. Brunkhill 2017, as you saw before, had high yielding. Yields increased up to 110 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And protein continued to increase up to 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre. But just take note that at this site, with these high yields, even with 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre applied, we were not hitting 13% protein across either variety. So this site with these high yields indicates that we didn't have nitrogen, even with our 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre applied, to hit 13% protein in either of these varieties. Regardless, our economic optimum of our rates that we did apply was 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre. So here's a summary of our gold level sites, with the economic optimum N rate being 140 pounds per acre across all sites. The nitrogen supply per bushel ranged from 1.7 at Brunkhill with extremely high yields to 3.0 at Carmen 2016, where we had yield limiting factors other than nitrogen at play. Moving on to nitrogen timing, we used predetermined linear contrast to pull out the treatments that we wanted to look at for these nitrogen timings, to just because of our large number of treatments. So these are done across varieties. So first, looking at our silver sites, just a reminder, these in-season applications were done on a base rate of 80 pounds of nitrogen applied at planting, and then the additional The additional applications were done at either stem elongation or flag leaf timing, and they were applied as broadcast Egerton treated urea. So at planting, or in terms of yield, at our silver level sites, we saw no difference between the timing of nitrogen and the yield that we got. We did see an increase in protein content when our nitrogen applications were split between at planting and flag leaf timing at those silver sites. But our stem elongation split, and when the entire application was applied at planting, had very similar protein contents. At our gold level sites, we did see a significant increase. Those letters aren't showing up on this one, but our stem elongation split did actually have a slight increase in yield over our at planting at our gold level sites, but our flag leaf application had similar yields to both other split applications. And in terms of our protein, we saw an increase in protein content as that split application was applied later in the season. So we saw flag leaf split applications having the greatest protein content, and then stem elongation split next, and they were both had higher protein content than when nitrogen was applied entirely at planting. So now moving on to our post-emphysis applications. It's important to note that post-emphysis applications are generally applied to boost protein. So you wouldn't expect there to be a yield response when you're applying this late in the season. Typically, your yield potential is already determined at post-emphysis timing. Because of that, I'm comparing it to the base rate of 80 pounds per acre in terms of yield, because that is where we would expect the yield to be. But we did see a decrease at our silver sites where only UAN was applied as a post-emphysis source. We did see a decrease in yield compared to that base rate of 80, as well as the equivalent rate of 110 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And then in terms of protein, we did see a large increase in protein with that post-emphysis application at those silver sites, and that was significantly greater than the base rate of 80, as well as the 110, so as well as that equivalent rate of nitrogen applied at planting. At our gold sites, we saw there was no significant difference in yield between the base rate and the 80 plus 30 pounds of nitrogen per acre, which is what you would expect. There to be no effect on yield. Those yields is yielding lower than the 110 pounds of nitrogen per acre, but that's just indicating that 80 pounds per acre, so our base rate that we chose, was a suboptimal rate for yield potential at these sites. In terms of protein, again, we saw a boost in protein content with our post-emphysis applications compared to both other rates, so the 80 as well as the 110 when applied at planting. Taking a quick look at growing season precipitation, as we know, 2017 was a much drier year than 2016. We saw almost half the amount of accumulated rainfall at Bronkhild in 2017 as you did in 2016. So when you're applying a surface broadcast application, you'd expect it to be very dependent on when our rainfall events occur, and you'd expect that 2017 to have a lower efficacy compared to 2016. When I was seeing pretty good in-season results across both my years, when I looked at when I actually applied my stem elongation timing, as well as my flag leaf timing and my post-emphysis timing, you can see that in 2016 as well as 2017, I had a rainfall event of at least 5 millimeters within 5 days of these applications. So if this dry spell that happened earlier in 2017 would have been pushed later in the season when I was applying some of those in-season applications, I might have expected some reduced efficacy compared to what I saw, and I may have had detrimental effects towards yield or protein. Just keeping in mind that we did use an enhanced efficiency fertilizer to try reduce losses as well, but we did also see rainfall events relatively quickly after all our applications across in 2016 and 2017. Looking at nitrogen sources, again, so at my post-emphysis, which was I only used two different post-emphysis sources out of my gold level sites, so only in Carmen and Bronkhild. for UAN as well as urea solution. Again, my UAN was diluted 50-50 with water, so it was diluted to 14% nitrogen solution. And then my urea solution that we had access to was actually a 9% urea solution. So there was a higher water volume going down with the urea solution compared to the UAN. Keep that in mind, but they were applied at the exact same rates. So 30 pounds per acre post-enthesis timing, which is 7 to 10 days after that fusarium headlight timing. So we saw an increase in yield with our urea solution compared to our UAN. And for protein, we also saw an increase in protein content with urea solution compared to UAN. We did see leaf burn with these foliar applications. These were applied through herbicide nozzles, so they are true foliar applications. In Carmen 2017, we saw higher leaf burn with our UAN compared to our urea solution. And we saw the same trends in Bronchial 2017, with urea solution having a much lower leaf burn rates than our UAN did. Our ESN blends, not much to say. We saw equivalent yield and protein for our ESN blends compared to a conventional urea. So when applied mid-row banded at planting, our urea blends perform similar to conventional urea applied at equivalent rates. And that's across both ESN blends that we looked at. So for preliminary conclusions of what we looked at, the total nitrogen supply, so the soil test nitrate N plus fertilizer required for economic optimum ranged from 1.5 to 2.3 at our silver sites and 1.7 to 3.0 at our gold sites. And that averages about 2.0 to 2.25 across all my sites. And that might be a bit lower than our current recommendation of 2.5 pounds of nitrogen per acre, or 2.5 pounds per bushel of target yield. Our stem elongation and flag leaf split applications yielded at least as well as when our nitrogen applications were applied entirely at planting. Flag leaf split applications consistently increased protein content compared to equivalent rates that were applied either entirely at planting or split between planting and stem elongation timings. Post-enthesis applications increased grain protein content with both sources as well as across all site years. And then our foliar applied urea solution resulted in higher yield and grain protein content compared to UAN. And lastly, our ESN blends produced yield and protein content similar to conventional urea when applied mid-row banded at planting. Just a note that this is a very large project. I only presented a small part of our data that we have today. So we do have a lot of other data coming off this. So we took soil tests for nitrogen mineralization. So we took soil tests. We took soil in the spring, and we're testing a number of different methods to hopefully try estimate the mineralization potential of those soils throughout the season. And then we also have in-season soil and tissue sampling. We have GreenSeeker and SPAD meter readings, and we're looking at the relationship that they have to final grain yield and protein content. We also took biomass samples, so we have nitrogen uptake and removal data that's coming for all these plots. And then we took post-harvest soil samples, and we're hoping to use them as an indicator to see if we had what our N sufficiency levels were throughout that growing season. So just stay posted. The full project report for this project will be coming this winter. We are done now. The field seasons are done, so it's just a matter of getting all the data analyzed and compiled into that report. And, of course, I just need to acknowledge everybody that worked on this project with us. So the wheat and barley growers, of course, they're the funders for this project. John Hurd and colleagues at Manitoba Ag, our contract research centers that did our silver level sites, David Lawton and Interra Agronomy for hosting our gold level sites at Bronchial both years, and then industry sponsors and all students and staff that helped with technical support on this project. And that is what I got.
Are there any questions for Amy?
No.
You might need to stand up because I can't see anything with these bright lights. Oh, there's one right there. Yep.
So you're just wondering about if we've done any work with sulfur applications and protein in wheat. I haven't. This project didn't include, we just put down base rates of phosphorus and sulfur to try and minimize the effect that they will have on yields, to try have every influence to do to nitrogen. But I'm not sure if John or Don have done any work with sulfur applications and protein content. Sorry.
Are you around for a good part of the day this afternoon?
Yeah, I'll be around throughout this session for the afternoon. So if you have any questions, feel free to grab me. So in our small plot trials, the concern... Oh, yeah, sorry. The question was if we saw any lodging concerns in our trials. The thing with lodging is in our small plot trials, our plots are this wide, and they're right up against the plot next to it. So lodging is not going to naturally occur as easily as it would in a field situation. So in our small plot trials, we saw a bit of lodging, but nothing as to what I would expect it to be in a field scale trial. John Hurd, in the bronze level trials, he did... which were the on-farm trials. They were field strip trials, and he did see yield limiting factors in a lot of these trials being lodging. So with that, our next project that is following this project up is actually looking at agronomic management practices to minimize lodging while maintaining these high yield potential of these varieties. So things like seeding rate, variety selection, PGR applications. That's kind of the next step to this project, because if we're going to be putting it down these large amounts of nitrogen that we're assuming these new varieties require, we need to know how to manage it properly to avoid that lodging stress.
Well, we'll call that it for now. You'll be around, so if you want to track Amy down later today, she'll probably be either within the room or up at the back answering any questions that you guys have. So please join me in thanking Amy for coming out today and sharing the research that she's been conducting.
Thanks for tuning in to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast. We'll see you next year from January 22nd to 24th, 2019.